Okay, today we're going to discuss a couple Seder issues. And this is something you can definitely say over at your Seder table. If you have religious people, secular people, it's something that will work for everybody. And you'll give it over in the way that's more as appropriate for your chevra. And this vort would be well to be said right before Yachatz. And you could start off by asking a question to everybody. Since time immemorial, what has been the shape of the matzah? Round. First, of course, people are going to say, well, you can get square matzahs, and there's more square matzahs than round matzahs today per matzah in the world. But that's only a modern technological invention. And the question is, why is it that Jews have always eaten round matzahs?
That's how they make it.
And, well, that's not how you have to make it. That's not how you have to make it. You could make it square like a pita as well. It's, you're just rolling out the dough, and there's many doughs that are rolled out rectangular and square. If you're going to make, a deli roll, you roll out the dough long and not round. There's no need to have to make it round. You can make it square the same way. It's not going to be any difference.
Well, it's extra work to make it round.
No, it makes the same work.
Practical stuff. It's not
the same work to make it just perfectly round. You don't have to make it perfectly anything for that matter. If you just roll it out straight, you're going to mostly get a rectangle that's a little bit curvy. But it's definitely not going to be round either. It takes a lot of work to make it round, just as much work as it takes to make it square. So there's something about why these matzahs are round. So the Chassam Sofer, this word is in a sefer called Shemen Rosh by this Rabbi Usher Anshel Katz. He brings down the Chassam Sofer, who explains a pasuk in Tehillim. Pasuk in Tehillim says, "Saviv Rishoyim Yisalechu." Saviv in circles, round. Rishayim Yisalechu. Rishayim go in circles. Rishayim spend their lives making circles. Which means people make circles in their lives. And let's give an example of what that circle of life is. The circle of life is, you sit down to a meal, you eat and you drink, and you ask the person, why are you eating and why are you drinking? So, Bemis, he wants to say, because I'm Bemis, a narcissistic pig. But it doesn't pass to Zogan Azoy. So they're going to give you a very intellectual answer. You're going to say, well, I have to eat and I have to drink so that I should have strength. Without, you don't eat and drink, you'll die. And I need strength. Good. So that's the first place on the circle, you're eating and drinking. Next piece, part of the circle, is to have strength. That's fine. What do you need strength for? What do I need strength for? If I don't have any strength, I can't go to work. Okay, next point on the circle. Go to work. Fine. So why do you have to go to work? What do you mean, why do I have to go to work? I have to go to work, so I have to make money. Okay, good. What do you have to make money for? I have to make money to buy things. Good. What do you have to buy? I have to buy food. I have to buy drinks. Okay. Why do you have to buy food and you have to buy drinks? What do you mean? So I can eat it. Good. Why do you have to eat it? So I can have strength. And the circle continues. Now there are some slight variations to this circular path. He calls it a hiluch hasvivi. But the fact of the matter is, this circle has no particular destination. It's not like a linear path. It's something that just keeps repeating itself and repeating itself. And people, you know, they try to make more money, so they'll make more profit and to fill their bellies even further. But what will the end of it all be? What will the end of it all be? There is no end to what they're doing. There is no objective in their lives. You ask honestly, what are your objectives? To make more. Keshkoyach. What are you going to do with the more? What do you mean? If once and I make more, I can buy more expensive food. What are you talking about? Do you think I want to have Wacky Mac all my life? I will now have rib steaks every day. Right? So it's really this. So it may not even be any more for that we'll have the strength to work. It could be just to gluttonize. And I work more to gluttonize more. And that's all it takes you. And at the end of the day, Pirkei Avos says, if you think about three things, you'll never come to sin. And the last one is, you become lunch for the worms. So at the end of the day, what it all, you die at 560 pounds, so more worms can have a better meal. That is the circle. Now, there are variations to that, of course, because everyone's going to deny it vociferously. But there are variations to it. For example, when you go on vacation, see? I work hard, so I can go on vacation. Yeah, okay. So why are you going on vacation? I'm going on vacation because I work so hard, I have to have a rest. You work so hard, you have to have a rest. So now, therefore, 2 weeks before the vacation, you work six times as hard to be more exhausted. When you're on the vacation, you're not even resting. And when you come back, you usually come back from Florida sick, many people. For some reason, maybe they'll come from Florida. They got pneumonia, go for 1 week, you get
lots
a pneumonia.
Of extra work,
and you got more work piling up. And usually people, and there's all kinds of, you know, post-vacation stress syndrome and this and that. So like what are you doing this? Or they have to spend a lot of money to buy, you know, expensive tickets to a sporting event because I have to relax, because if I don't relax, I won't have the courage to work again. And then they have to come up with new variations of circles once they retire and they don't have to work. Then they have to have better excuses why they don't eat, why they have to eat. I have to eat so I can enjoy myself now. Because I have to have the strength to be able to play golf. To be able to have fun. And why do you have to have fun? Because I want to have fun. Because I worked so hard my whole life to have fun. Okay, so what kind of fun do you have? Well, we just spend our time. You mean you waste your time? No, I said I spent my time. Doing what? Playing golf. Okay, so that's your goal in life. Which is another, no, pardon the pun, it's another round circle. It's putting a ball in a cup. I spent my whole life putting a ball in a cup, a ball in a cup, ball in a cup, ball in a cup. Until I'm able to do it, you know, not 112 times a day. I only have to hit the stick, you know, 90 times. And that's why I got to eat so much to be able to do that. So all it is the circle. Right? A true Eved Hashem doesn't go in circles. You ask a very observant Jew, and when I mean observant, he's observant of what life is about. And because he's observant of what life is about, he understands he has to be careful of what he does. Observant Jews, they subjugate their bodies to serve Hashem. And when you serve Hashem, every moment is a goal into itself. Now, if you recall, before Adam HaRishon did his sin, and that's really this circle, this vicious circle is from the time of Adam HaRishon. If you recall, after Adam HaRishon sinned, the earth became cursed. And why did the earth become cursed? So we know the famous Rashi. Famous Rashi says that the earth too had sinned. Because when Hashem told the earth that he wanted them on the third day of creation to produce fruit trees that will give off fruit, when indeed the Torah records what happened, it says the trees gave off fruit and not the fruit trees gave off fruit. So what's going on over there? So we know that Hashem had intended that the tree, the bark and the trunk and the branches of the tree should taste like the fruit it would be giving off as well. So an apple tree, the branches of an apple would taste like an apple. That's an Eitz Peri. That's a fruit tree. Instead, the trees, as it were, of course, trees don't have a mind. Hashem put it in nature. The tree says, if we're going to do that, then everyone's going to eat the tree completely. There'll be no fruit. So therefore decided not to make the bark and the branches taste like fruit. So therefore, no one's going to want to eat it. But what do you want to see? What do you see? The Hashem embedded in creation, in the earth itself, this crazy idea that you could rebel against Hashem. Because, and God had to create it, because if he didn't create it, no one in their right mind would go against Hashem. If you understand that you were created by Hashem, how in the world could you not do what Hashem told you to do? So Hashem had to put a crazy, meshugana psychology that says, I don't have to do what Hashem wants me to do. And you come up with a very great logic of this. This Rav Kook, in his Oros HaTshuva, calls this our sin of our earthly existence. And when you're busy with a tree, and there's a lot of time with that tree, the tree itself is of no value other than the fact that it can give fruit. In other words, all the time and all the effort and all the growth of the tree is only a means to an end, which is the fruit. And they were looked at two separate entities. And that becomes a circle. It becomes a circle. Now, if the tree itself is a fruit, then that's a goal into itself. And can also give fruits, which is also an amazing goal. But instead, what was put into the psyche of creation is that you can do a lot of effort where the effort and what you do is really worthless unless something happens as a result of that. And now you've separated the means to the ends. You've created this idea of the means to the ends. And this is really the greatest source of human misery in life. As we don't value the means as important, and we see no goal in the means. And we feel that every moment has to get me somewhere else. And the moment itself is not significant. And that's the idea of the circle. Now, when Mashiach comes, we're told that the tree again will taste like the fruit. There'll be no separation of the means and the ends. And you see how far this has gone. This has gone so far that people cannot enjoy and have any simcha in life. They can't. You go to a simcha, you see how this is so more pronounced as time is closer to Mashiach and how the world is trying so hard not to be like what Mashiach is. You could have a world where people are so busy at a simcha and they have to take selfies. They have to take selfies. And you could be at a simcha and instead of men dancing at the wedding as they should be, they're taking pictures. And there is already a photographer that's being paid way more money than they should be spent on this. Why are you taking pictures?
Photographs people won't look at.
But why are you taking the picture? You have to give a reason for you taking the picture. Why do you take a selfie? Why? So that I will be able to send it to somebody else who will see what happened at this wedding. So that means this wedding is only a means to an end. The wedding itself is not a goal. We're going to show the pictures. It'll be on, onlysimchas.com. Even in the frim world, we've fallen into this terrible trap. You know, so you're in a moment of simcha. Can you not enjoy the simcha? No, because there's no end. There's no ends. It's just a means. It's also a means. Right? You see, the biggest proof is the day you get married. Is the day you get married is such an amazing day. It's a day where you could be mechaper on all your averus. But that doesn't come cheaply. A chassan and kala got to spend most of the day doing tshuva. But instead, because people are in this circle of life, you must spend at least 3 hours doing this. And how about if you pose like this, please? For 3 hours on the most... Can you imagine if we do this on Yom Kippur? On Yom Kippur... Let's just smile. For what? For the picture. What's for the picture? Because we're going to have an album. Such a great album. And what's that album for? Oh, it'll be for posterity. Whose posterity? Well, you know, maybe you're going to want to see your wedding one day. Nope. Now let's look at it. Let's look at ourselves right now in our 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. Look how you look now. Going to look at that wedding album. And you're going to say, ugh, I look terrible compared to that wedding album. I used to look that way. So, and therefore what? To look into the past, that's a very productive thing. And what's going to be with all those pictures? They get thrown out. And they're getting smart. They know people are throwing out. So now you digitize it. So you got to spend a lot of time digitizing it. And your own wedding isn't even a goal. Is that the most destructive thing? And he's paying home. Why? For one simple reason. Because everybody's agreed. If everybody's life is a circle, then they're going to force your life to be in a circle. There's only one reason to have pictures. It's so photographers can make money. There's not one better reason. You tell me a better reason for it, and I'll agree to you. There's no reason for it. And this is why you have to work so hard, don't forget. You have to work so hard because you have to pay for a wedding where 90% of the expense is thrown into the garbage. But then again, you're going to show everybody that you can make a good wedding. So that's for nothing. So your wedding's just a means. See, I worked my whole life and I didn't cheap out on this one. Everyone will remember this wedding. And then what happens? 50% of these people get divorced. So if you know 50%, why are you spending so much money on this? It's a bad investment. Did you put a lot of money in an investment that has a 50% chance of failing? But you just keep going on that circle. It's just a constant circle. Okay, and they can't be in the moment. You know, I don't know. I'd like to know, what am I missing in life that I don't take a lot of pictures? Tell me, what am I missing? If you could explain it to me, I would be the first one to get it done. But you can't tell me because you know there's no value to it. But everyone pressures you into it, so you have to do it. That's all. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you want to feel accepted by people. That's another means. I do things in life because people tell me this is what's acceptable. And therefore, I don't use my mind, but I keep staying on this circle. These are the variations of the circle. But it's all one circle. You're going nowhere fast, forever. That's what it is. Yeah, you really have no goals. Because every goal is a means to the next goal. You know, they tell the story, as a fable, of this fisherman who comes in after a day, after midday. He comes in with some fish. Somebody buys the fish. He says, what are you going to do the rest of the day? He came in so early. I don't know, I'll take a few fish, I'll fry the fish, I'll lay on the beach. He's one of these guys, you know, in the Caribbean, one of these, you know. I'll lay on the beach and just relax. He says, why are you doing that? You know, you could do so much more. He says, what? He says, what do you mean? You could catch fish a whole day. And if I caught fish a whole day, you'd make more money. Well, you'd make more money. What'd I do with the more money? What do I do with the more money? You could build a factory, a fish factory. And then what would I have a fish factory? You'd employ hundreds of people. And then what? You make so much more money. And then what would I do? What would you do then? You know, you could take a trip to exotic places with all that money. And what would I do with those exotic places? Well, you could go fishing. And then what? And you could have a barbecue on the beach. See what that money will do for you? He says, well, I don't get it. I'm doing it right now. We all live like that fisherman. Don't think not. It's every part is like that. So Adam tore the fruit off of the tree, disconnected the thing. How bad this is, because what do children see parents? What do your children see you as? I'm sorry to tell you, and it's going to be very hurtful. Furniture. Your children see you as a means and not an end. You've only been there for them because they use you. And if you wouldn't have given them much, they wouldn't need you. And as you get older, you begin to see how much less they need you. And therefore, you beg for those days where they want to see you. And they're going to do you a big favor if they're going to come over and see you. You know why? Only because when you die, they want to make sure they get their inheritance. And they say, you're looking at very, very cruelly. I'm looking at very honestly. It's a circle. And it's very rare that it's any different. And unfortunately, parents look at their children as means. And that's why the children look at their parents as means. This is all what society has taught us. What do you mean children as a means? What do you mean? Well, we used to have 9 kids, everybody, 9, 12, 15 kids. Why? Because you needed people to work on the farm. That's a means. If the kid couldn't work on the farm, he was useless. Now that you don't need to work on the farm, kids are a liability. You have as few as you need to have. As few as you need to have. And only if it works out and it's convenient for me. And I have this feeling that I need to feel, a woman needs to, used to need, not anymore even. Used to, I need to feel I'm creative and productive and I've produced something in this world. And that child just is the proof that I can create things. Or I never really was good in hockey when I was a kid and I want to have a kid that I could live my life through my kid and force them to be a hockey player. And I, you know what, and these children are trophies and I need to have trophies to show everybody how amazing I am. And that's why this child, what Yiddish and Nachas, your kid's a doctor, why? Selfish reasons. Because if you really cared about them, the last thing you'd want them to be is wealthy. We spend so much time making sure they go to the schools where they'll make the most money, they couldn't care less if they're religious or not. So you want to deny me that this typical secular person, they view their children as a means, their children view their parents as a means, it's just a circle of life. That's what it is.
How do we break the orbit?
And in the Golus of Mitzrayim, the Jews were going in that same circle. You know, it's interesting. If you do a little research, you will find that in Egypt, bread was king. And that was a big chiddush. Making bread was a whole chiddush in life. We take for granted, but how did anybody think that you can put sourdough or yeast and make old bread, make new bread? And what would involve making bread? And they had 400 words in their vocabulary that have to deal with bread. And they made it sophisticated. They took the simple pita recipe that didn't take a lot of effort to create leavened bread because they were looking to make the greatest pleasures in their world. And that was their circle of pleasure. And the Egyptians, when they enslaved the Jews, they gave us work that had no goal, Pisum and Ramses, storage facilities that would sink into the ground. When Hashem took us out of Egypt to be as the Am Segula, to go to Har Sinai, what did Hashem do? He shattered the circle of life of Egypt and that's world. And to teach us that there is a purpose in every moment of life, and every moment has a great opportunity. If you connect it to Hashem, every single moment of your life is a goal into itself. And you want to know what those goals are? The Torah tells you what they are. You follow the Torah, you're not going in a circular way. Every moment is a valuable moment. It's not a means to an end. Of course, there are hachanas. But even as we've said, the hachana for a mitzvah is greater than the mitzvah. That proves, I spoke a lot of that last Shabbos. If the hachana for a mitzvah is greater than mitzvah, that means the means is an end. And even if you don't reach the end, the means is an end. So therefore you can see how if you that's what I said, I'm going to take you and give you a Torah. A Torah will give you a linear life. And that's the purpose of life. And therefore when you take the round matzah, which is this circle of life, and at Yachatz, what do? You break the circle. And we're no longer going in a circle anymore. And matzah is a lechem oni. It reminds us of the poverty of Egypt, that life was a circle. And we break this circle with the yachatz. And as we start the seder, our goal, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, is to break the circle that we are in by the end of this night. You hear? Of course, you're going to ask, how do you break the circle? How do you get off the merry-go-round? I only have 5 minutes to explain it. So this Rav Gershon Henoch of Radzin, Zichron of Varcha, in the Sefer Yesod Yesharim explains one of the ways is the morer that we eat. The morer we eat, it says, Vayimoru as chayim, the Egyptians made our life bitter. And he says, the greatest evil that exists is when a person doesn't see himself as missing anything in his life. when he thinks that everything is fine. It really is an adultery of Chazal's statement, Asher Asamech B'chalko, who is a rich person who's happy with his lot. Well, that's meant to be said when dealing with not wanting to look to get more than you need. But when a person thinks that life is amazing, when he thinks the circle is amazing, then he's never going to get out of the circle. Go try to explain to a secular person who's divorced, whose kids don't talk to him, that he has an amazing circle of life. He doesn't. He doesn't see it. Only when a person begins to feel his incompleteness, when a person begins to feel his emptiness, when he begins to feel that this is a terrible circle, I don't know how the heck I got myself into this circle. At that point, that terrible feeling that you're missing so much is the beginning of redemption. The main exile in Egypt was that the Jews didn't even think they were missing anything. They were slaves, children of slaves, children of slaves, children of slaves, and they would have kept living in Egypt forever. The Medrash says no servant ever left Egypt. No one ever escaped. Well, it's like a Stalag 13 movie. Question is, did the Egyptians have such sophisticated barbed wire fence nobody could escape? What do you mean nobody escaped Egypt? So the Beis Yaakov explains, why didn't anybody want to leave? Right? And they said, better to be a servant in Egypt than to leave, because who knows what's going to be on the other side. At least I got my bread taken care of. In other words, they accepted this way of life. No one felt they needed to leave Egypt. That part of life is suffering. We all look, part of life is working 60 hours a week, getting migraine headaches from work, giving your whole life for work, and people think that's good, and you got a raise, and you're happy, and you don't even want to get out of that circle. Say, why don't you take a different job? You don't have to work, sir. What are you talking about? This is amazing. This is amazing. I have stomach ulcers. I have high blood pressure. This is, but we got doctors who can take care of that. Right? The Jews were so sunken. The whole people were so sunken in their taivas. They became so embedded in their taiva. That's what makes a circle go. So you begin to think that life can't be any better than this. I have everything I need. Why would I want to run away from my taivas? The answer is you only can run away from something if you can't take it anymore. The avoda was avoda's perach. Perach, backbreaking work, but it was produced with a perach, with a smooth tongue. You're going to make your life miserable, but we're going to give you a raise. You're going to be promoted in this company. A perach, a soft mouth. That's what Paro did. And Moshe comes and he does something that Paro does not like. He starts talking about freedom. He starts saying, don't you realize how bitter your life is? And the Jews begin to realize, you know what, this is true. And they start screaming out to Hashem because they felt they were deficient. And they finally saw, there must be something better than this. When you have this feeling of emptiness and bitterness of the exile, that means you can begin to plan your escape. And that's the Haskolas HaYeshua. And how do you get that? By tasting the more. That's why the halacha says, if you take a ball of matzah and swallow it, you have fulfilled the mitzvah. If you take the maror and put it all in your mouth and swallow it, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah at all. Why? Because you haven't tasted the bitterness of it. The main yeshua is by tasting the bitterness of being far away from Hashem. And now your job at the Seder is a very difficult and delicate one, is you have to introduce people to the bitterness of their lives. But be very careful how you do it. It's hard for people to hear how bitter their lives are. And the Arizal says that the more has to be chewed really good with your teeth to taste what it means to be far away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when you taste the bitterness of your situation, then you're going to want to get off of the merry-go-round. And then that's the beginning of the yeshua that you have. So this is a general way of looking at the Seder. That's why when you come to the end of the Haggadah, the end of the Maggid, you know, now you take the broken matzah, and now you eat the more. Because you eat the more is meant to be eaten together with the matzah. Matzahs umaroirim yoichluhu. That's the korech sandwich. That if I want to break that circle, that vicious circle, I've got to have moror in order to break that circle. And you've got to feel a tremendous feeling of incompleteness coming into the Seder or going out of the Seder to say, I've got to get onto a circle. When you really feel how terrible your life is, then you can begin to get free. If you walk in the Seder, think your life is amazing, then you have no hope of being free. You're going to be the biggest slave. You'll be slave from the Hashem should help us that we should eat the Mora well and see what's missing and get off the circle. And then we get to the next part. We got to Shavuos. We learn the Torah will teach us how to have a life that's a linear life, that every moment is important. Shkayah.